Hello and welcome all to Consumer Choice Radio. This is a weekly conversation featuring the latest news, interviews, and expert analysis that covers consumer topics around the world. We're broadcasting on the Big Talker 106.7 FM out of Wilmington, North Carolina. It's a great Saturday morning for those of you listening live. And I am one of your hosts, Yael Osofsky of the Consumer Choice Center. And I'm joined by my colleague, the North American Affairs Manager of CCC, Mr. David Clement. David, how are you, good man?
I'm doing fairly well.
So this is our radio debut, the premiere episode that we are putting together of this. We are live out on the nets, and you'll also be able to find all of the things that we're talking about, as well as another copy of the show if you're listening live and would like to follow along. If you would like to subscribe to the podcast form, everything else, you can find that at consumerchoiceradio.com. All of that figures into our website, and you'll be able to get good amount of information about us, about what we're doing, and more of the things that we're talking about. So for the small intro, Consumer Choice Center, we're a consumer advocacy group. The big things that we're focusing on is supporting lifestyle freedom, innovation, privacy, science, and consumer choice. And there's so many different policy areas that we deal with. We have colleagues around the world that you will be hearing from throughout the course of our program each and every week. And this is broadcast Saturdays at 10 a.m. on the Big Talker FM. So hope to get a lot of you continuing to listen to the program. We've got great things happening, great guests lined up, and overall a very good program. So very happy to be on the mic, and great to have David here as a partner in crime.
Yeah, very excited. Very excited. It's awesome to be on the airwaves, talk about what's going on in the U.S., what's going on in the world, the latest trends, where the government is intervening in our lives unnecessarily. So to say I'm excited would certainly be an understatement.
And then I think that's a very good start. Let's go with David's enthusiasm. And let's talk about one of the things that you and I have both written about, you've testified on in Canada and other places, and it's top of mind for specifically a lot of consumers that we might know. Vapors. The vaping idea of harm reduction is one that has been the most popular in probably the last decade. And We've seen huge efforts by governments all around to try to limit this. The latest news that came out right around Christmas time and New Year's was President Trump's flavor ban on certain pod devices. So now if you go to the store and you buy yourself a Juul or Enjoy, the only flavors that will now be allowed by federal stipulation are going to be menthol and the tobacco flavor. So none of the mint, none of the mango, none of any of the others, and that's only for the pod devices. The open devices, of which the hobby vapists use, these things are still completely open and you can still have these flavors, but some of these restrictions are still sort of going to have a big effect on the industry and consumer choice. So definitely not a good thing, but that's sort of the opening mantra of what's been happening in the vape world.
Yeah, I mean, and it's one of those things where the only silver lining in the ban is that they didn't go ahead and do like a full blanket ban of all flavors for all devices. Now, it's certainly intrusive and definitely heavy-handed and I would argue unwarranted to go the route that they've done, because while wanting to try and tackle youth vaping, which is certainly a problem, nobody's really denying that. They're eliminating a mechanism that adult smokers use to quit, because one of the keys to wanting to make that switch, which is exponentially less risky, is that it tastes better, and flavors have a huge, huge part in that. And so it's unfortunate that the administration seems to have a bit of a blind spot when it comes to that.
Yeah, and definitely the tweet world is all ablaze about this. You can find plenty of great comments there. And there's a lot of great actions. I know that happening this week in New Jersey. I believe several cities are looking to have their full vape bans. So as you mentioned, this is not a ban across the board, just on various flavors in those pod devices, which is strangely really super specific. And if they can find a way to just not call it a pod, maybe that'll happen. What has been suggested is that maybe they just call mint menthol now. Who knows? But we know what the Trump administration... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and the hilarious thing here is when they make those rules, and let's say they ban flavors for pod devices, it doesn't mean that these pods aren't going to exist out there. It means they're not going to be produced by legal manufacturers. And so I think it should be expected that there'll be lots of opportunities for consumers to buy similar knockoff products illegally in the black market. And that certainly doesn't benefit anyone. It doesn't benefit consumer safety. It probably will only worsen the health outcomes that we've seen in terms of vaping. So it really does, from a public health perspective, it really does shoot the government in the foot because it runs against its initial goal altogether.
Yeah. And we saw that's coming from the Trump administration. So now, thanks to Trump, probably a lot of people are going to be turning to the dark net to purchase their favorite flavors of their pod vape devices. Who thought this would be the first big legislative push in 2020? Obviously, a lot of other things happening, but that was the first kind of significant thing that changed. And it's not just Trump. I made a point, David, and I wanted to see how entertained you would be by hearing what the Democratic presidential candidates have to say on vaping.
Great. Let's hear it.
So we've got a couple here. I think I got about five of those I can get clips from. It was an issue a little bit before when people were asking about it and when you have the illnesses in the news. So let's just start with, I think, one of the funniest ones. This is Senator Bernie Sanders. He was asked this about 2-3 days ago. So it wasn't long ago. It was at a rally. Young girl stood up and asked him about vaping. He actually kind of forgot what the question was at first and then jumped into it. And then we hear a little bit about what Bernie says.
Gianna, help me out here.
Vaping.
Oh, vaping.
That's okay.
All right. Sorry. The evidence seems to indicate that vaping is not so good for your health. All right. So when you have products that are not good for your health, I think you got to tell that industry that they cannot produce a product which is making our kids sick. And what they do is what they put the flavoring in it, right? To make it even taste better. You know kids who are vaping? Are they getting stuck on it? What's the story there?
It's nicotine. If you start doing it, you get addicted to it.
Okay. That's the whole... All right. So the answer is, I think we shut down the industry.
So what's the problem? All right, there's this product. What's the answer? Well, obviously we shut it down.
Shut it down. Yeah, completely. Because that, that's worked for all drugs. It worked for alcohol when we banned that, when alcohol was potentially making people sick. And so, I just love the historical perspective that Bernie has there. It's just second to none, being able to sit back without any hesitation and go, oh, well, we just ban it then.
Well, he was computing it in his head. He's like, well, there's an industry doing something I don't like. What are they doing? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. We ban them. Pretty simple. Easy. Yep. He actually continues on.
If they're causing addiction and if people – and the evidence is that people are getting sick as a result. They're inhaling a lot of bad stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which takes me to another issue.
So they're inhaling a lot of bad stuff. No mention of cigarettes, no mention of people actually switching from tobacco products. So it goes, and like Bernie does, he has to bring it together to his large point about the billionaires and all the companies.
It ties in. When we talk about the corporate elite and we talk about corruption, it is one thing for a company to be greedy and want to make as much money as possible. It is another thing entirely to be producing a product which hurts people, makes them sick, maybe even kills them. And I think none of us, when we think about corporate greed, you're thinking about the drug companies. So I'm talking about the fossil fuel industry producing a product that is going to destroy the planet. And I'm thinking about my own father, who died at a young age. He was 58. He smoked 2 packs of cigarettes a day. And at that point, he was told by the industry that cigarettes were fine for you. Okay? In fact, during World War II, we gave out cigarettes to members of the armed forces. So, you know, what we have to demand of corporate America, of course they have the right to make money, but you don't have a right to sell and produce a product which destroys human health and human life.
Yeah, just, I mean, absolutely no knowledge on harm reduction. I mean, he's talking about corporate greed, when in reality, I mean, we talk about open systems. For the most part, you're talking about mom and pop shops, very, very community-based kind of small businesses that literally only exist because there's a community of people who want to stop smoking. What would be different if his dad had had harm reduction alternatives made available to him?
Exactly.
He probably would have lived much longer. And so there's just such a disconnect, just completely ignorant. And I mean, it's totally fine to be ignorant on various subjects. I don't expect these politicians to be well-versed in every aspect of public policy. But when you have grand opinions while also mirroring that with your own ignorance, it's just a recipe for disaster. And it's a real shame that the folks on the other side of the aisle from Trump are not using this as a means to have a little bit more of a nuanced approach, because I mean, we saw in response to the ban, there were tens and tens of tens of thousands of vapers in swing vote states who all came together and rallied and said, "Hey guys, we vape, we vote. This matters to us. This has saved our lives. Please don't ban these harm reduction products." And so hopefully at some point that message will get through to folks on the Democratic side and we can see a bit of change of tune, or at least something that's a little more nuanced than we're just going to shut down the industry entirely.
So you're listening to Consumer Choice Radio on Big Talker FM. We just played the clip there of Bernie Sanders, and he is one half of the what Vice calls two old guys reveal they know nothing about vaping. And the other one would be, of course, former Vice President Joe Biden. So he was also asked a question. I think he was hanging out in Iowa by a young man. And let's hear Biden's response to this.
The answer is I have not met with any of the particular individual small business people selling the vaping equipment and the kinds of material that you can include in put in the pipe. But I tell you what. One of the things that, you know, everybody knows who Donald Trump is. We got to let them know who we are. At least I let them know who I am. And I choose science over fiction. And so if the science is demonstrating it's doing great damage, then I don't care what it does to a small business person who's selling this stuff. If it is damaging lungs, if it's causing the kind of damage that is said, and that study's not been fully done yet, if it turns out that it is, then I would eliminate it. I would make it. I would go after it in a hard way. I would make it broader, not just where he is.
Wow. So science over fiction, David.
Well, I mean, this is where I wish there was some informed reporter in the room who could point out, well, Public Health England has already studied this, has said that fairly definitively that vaping is 95% less harmful than smoking, and even in light of the illnesses that have come about, has said that it still maintains its position regardless what the CDC or the FDA is going to report. And so, I mean, I'm all for science over fiction, but it can't be selective and it can't be based on his perusing of the headlines.
Yeah, exactly.
If he wants to make some broad policy claim that he's going to go after in a hard way, whatever that means in terms of arresting people or locking people up for having vape devices, I don't know. But if he's going to say something like that, he should at least have read or understood the arguments against that case, and it certainly doesn't seem like he ever has.
I mean, these candidates are pulling in tens of millions of dollars in fundraising. They could easily just hire, you know, one or two people to research this for pretty much nothing. I think you or I were pretty much available. We can tell you a lot about vaping there, Uncle Joe. We got plenty of research.
Exactly.
You can, you know, siphon some of that. We can tell you what's going on a little bit. He did this contrast with Trump, but that's the problem with some of these issues is there's not really much difference between particularly the left and the right on this, at least in the main political sphere. And, you know,
no.
We said science over fiction, right? So let's hear more from the science candidate. Let's hear from your buddy. Let's hear from Andrew Yang. Let's hear what Andrew Yang has to say on vaping. I want to see David's reaction on this one.
We've seen some real problems and tragedies even. I mean, people having illnesses and even dying from a product that many people, in my view, weren't fully aware of the dangers around, particularly because some of the manufacturers have cut corners in various ways. So to me, the least we can do is get our arms around who the producers are, what's in the products, and affirmatively communicate what's in these vaping products and what the risks are to people. And you do need to treat minors differently. It's clear that there are many of these vaping products that are targeted specifically at kids and minors through the flavors and whatnot. So right now it's been the Wild West, and we have to get our arms around it and start putting regulations in place to protect our kids in particular.
It's been the Wild West, David.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's really been the Wild West. I think when he's talking about these manufacturers, it doesn't take much to really dig into where people are getting sick. That's obviously a concern. But for the most part, the evidence is pointing directly at products that are purchased illegally. And as with any black market product, you do have producers cutting corners, and some of those corners that are being cut are getting people sick. But the answer to that isn't more prohibition. So if the problem is created by prohibition, more bans or more restrictions isn't going to solve that problem. All it's going to do is exacerbate it. So, I mean, it's disappointing to hear from someone like Yang, who is usually a little more nuanced and a little more with it. It certainly is disappointing to see him starting to dip his toes into the nanny state arena of public policy.
Yeah, and he does, you know, he makes a point of saying, hey, it's about the youth, but, you know, there's still not that recognition. And again, Trump is one of the only ones who's had that recognition that actually, you know, adults do use this to quit. So we can't just, you know, 86 the entire industry. We can't just 86 this
yep.
entire innovation, which, by the way,
yep.
has come from the market. It's come from entrepreneurs, and it hasn't come from any kind of government agency or bureau. And I think that's what really offends a lot of people. And who do you think is the most, out of all the Democratic candidates, who do you think is the strictest out of all the declared Democrats?
Ooh, if you had asked me this question a month ago, I probably would have said Kamala Harris, because she probably would want to arrest vapers on the spot. Who's the strictest? I'm going to go with Michael Bloomberg.
There we go.
Because he is the nanny state in chief.
He is the nanny state in chief. And here's a great clip of him on Good Morning America, America's favorite morning program, talking about not just why we need to have more laws against vaping, but also why he's going to use parts of his personal fortune to make sure that we do that even more.
Change, soft drinks, gun control, and now teen vaping. Why?
Because all of a sudden, all the progress we made in reducing smoking, particularly among kids, is at jeopardy if they start vaping. Vaping is as bad, if not worse, than smoking. In one pod of that you use in your Juul, or there's some others too, but it's mainly Juul, there's more nicotine than in a whole pack of cigarettes.
All right, I have to stop it. There's a little bit more, but vaping is as bad or worse than smoking. I mean, this is it's criminal to say this. This is dangerous. You can't make a claim like this that's obviously not true and is so anti-science.
Oh, I mean, that is something that is objectively false. There's absolutely no evidence to suggest that it is as harmful, and there is zero evidence to suggest that it is more harmful. Oh, yeah. And so for someone like Bloomberg to say that, yeah, it's really troubling, because anyone who followed when he was mayor of New York City knows that when he wants to go after even the most trivial of things, like the size of your soda, he's going to do it, and they're going to crack down on that 13th ounce of soda.
Put down the big gulp. Pull down the big gulp. Put down the vape. And it's not just not just rhetoric and, you know, what he's talking about. He's actually going to throw some money in there. Here's the rest of the clip.
And kids just don't realize that. They like the flavored stuff, so that's what they're doing, entertaining. But they're not using it to stop smoking. There's no evidence that vaping helps you stop smoking whatsoever. If there was, the company would put it out, and they haven't.
How much money are you going to spend for the stuff?
We announced $160 million over 3 years. But, you know, you could use more if you can find ways to do it. You just have to have a game plan and budget, and that's what our budget is for.
He's always got big ideas.
Yeah, big ideas to take away your freedom, everybody. That is former New York City mayor and now Democratic presidential candidate Michael Bloomberg.
Yeah, I mean, that is it, like Bloombergism. The best way that I would describe Bloombergism. So he's, I mean, on economic issues, he's certainly more of a centrist than the Warrens or the Sanders of the world. But then he couples that with being this petty control freak, where he feels that he gets to be the arbiter of your own kind of personal health, and does so on the back of sheer ignorance, where he actually has no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So it's not just a problem that he wants to control your life. It's that he wants to control your life based on misinformation.
Yeah.
That's pretty dangerous stuff.
And we can do an entire program just on Michael Bloomberg and his very programmatic policies. I've written about a lot of the stuff with the soda taxes and Michael Bloomberg. Again, he's not just a face who has a bad opinion. He's actually been funding a lot of this, and he's funded a lot of the efforts to pass sugar taxes and soda taxes. I know, David, you've written about this a lot in various jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. He's given a lot of money to philanthropies to carry this out, and a lot of money in the anti-vaping groups. And one of the biggest ones that have come out now is this is the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. It's led by Matthew Myers. So he was actually in that Good Morning America clip. He was sitting beside of Bloomberg because it was a kind of a joint initiative. And I dug up this clip. This is from 2014. This is when Matthew Myers, who's head of that group, was testifying before Congress about, you know, the potentials for vaping. And it was much more about getting kids to stop smoking back then. And this is what he said.
Our core position is that responsibly marketed and properly regulated, e-cigarettes could benefit the public health if, in fact, they helped people switch off of cigarettes to either the exclusive use of e-cigarettes or to quit the use of nicotine altogether.
So what changed? What changed? I mean, this was something that the public health experts were all in on many years ago, and now they've just come out. I mean, it can't just be this, I call it fake outrage crisis, because we know that everyone who got sick was actually inhaling these cartridges that they bought off the black market, which had all kinds of THC and vitamin E oils. Anyway, so I think
It's telling that, I think it's really concerning if anti-vape hysteria becomes kind of the soup of the day that brings together both parties. Because when both parties are brought together in an instant like that, it's almost always just to limit your personal freedoms. I certainly don't want that to be the soup of the day in terms of policy suggestions across the board. But it's an issue that you had people who are otherwise intelligent people who understood the harm reduction benefits, change their tune in the matter of a year or two, simply because it's now fashionable to do so, or because Michael Bloomberg is doling out $120 million to get that going. It's just it's a headache all around.
Yeah, and you're listening to Consumer Choice Radio on the Big Talker FM. So much there with that vaping, but we kind of have to, you know, we've been focusing a little bit more on the U.S. We've been paying attention to what's been happening with the Democratic candidates and with Trump, but we need a little bit of update about what's happening up north. David, fill us in. We've talked about harm reduction and vaping. There have been some big experiments that have happened in Canada in the past year or two. Tell us some updates. What's been going on specifically with cannabis? You've been a big, I guess, a very loud voice in the media about the cannabis policy, the legalization. What's the latest update? You know, is this something that we should be excited about? Is this a model for the world, or what's next?
Yeah. So, for those who are listening who maybe aren't aware, Canada did legalize recreational cannabis. So, meaning you can consume it in many senses like you do alcohol. Great policy. I think that legalization is certainly the way to go. Colorado has shown that there are viable models. In a nutshell, I would say the biggest issues with the Canadian process is that they didn't look to what had gone on in the United States in a state like Colorado and mirror where the success was. For a variety of reasons, the Liberal government, rather than leaning on the example of Colorado, they went in the direction of a much bigger government, more nanny state approach to doing things, which got rid of marketing and advertising for the most part. It's heavily taxed. There are all sorts of access restrictions that prevent people from accessing legal product. And what we've seen, at least in the short term here, is that the black market still does exist. It's still thriving per se. And that is almost entirely because the legal market is just not accessible enough. And so the kind of lessons from Canada is, this is great public policy. It's totally appropriate. It's definitely the way forward. But when you do so, you can't regulate it or over-regulate it to the point where the legal market is inaccessible, because you're just not going to get people making that transition to the legal market. And if people are still buying illegally, there are all sorts of product quality issues. Obviously, that funds criminal networks, which do other nefarious things. And so that's something that, for whatever reason, the Trudeau government couldn't figure out. Hopefully they can change their course and
yeah, hopefully hopefully he can do an about face on this.
Yes, exactly. Have some self-reflection and say, okay, well, we were on the right track, but this is how we're going to fix it. Yeah,
take a look in the mirror and see what's wrong. And then you've also were published on this in New Zealand, proving that Consumer Choice Center is truly across the entire globe. This was in the Dominion Post of New Zealand and on their biggest news site, What New Zealand Can Learn from Canada's Cannabis Experiment. So New Zealand is fairly progressive with this, but you're kind of providing lessons about what they should follow, what they should not follow. Kind of interesting, again, New Zealand, another Commonwealth country, good positive things could be coming.
Yeah, again, huge step forward for them. It's great that they're going to have a referendum on it. I expect that it will probably pass, which would be fantastic. But they are going to replicate, unfortunately, some of the mistakes that were made in Canada. So something as simple as a limit on how much you can buy or how much you can carry on your person at a time. So having a very strict limit and very low limit, the idea is that that's going to curb usage or have some sort of positive public health effect. But what it does is it actually highlights how hypocritical the government is. And this has been my criticism of the Canadian government on that, on the personal carry limit and the purchase limit, and also my criticism in that op-ed of New Zealand's government, because, and this is the same for in the United States, where you can buy alcohol, there is no personal carry limit for the most part, with a few exceptions, obviously. So you can go in and you can buy a you can buy 12 bottles of wine or 24 beer or a case of your favorite spirit, and that isn't an issue. And
that's
so the
how,
idea
yeah,
that
that's how people plan weddings and events and so many things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, imagine you're picking up wine for a party you're hosting one bottle at a time, driving to and from the store.
Well, talk about the impact comical. On the climate. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. Economies of scale here. Yeah. You should be allowing increased purchases for the environment. I like that argument.
And there's much more that will be said and done on cannabis throughout this program. So that do tune in. Continue to tune in if you're interested in that. Not just what's happening in North Carolina. There's great stuff happening here in this state, but across the country and indeed across the world. So very good to have perspective there. We're at the bottom of the hour. It is the Consumer Choice Radio on the Big Talker FM. We talked a little bit about the news, did a little bit of vaping, talked a little bit about cannabis. One thing I wanted to point out, because we talked a little bit about climate, let's talk about some cold climate. We've got some events coming up in Davos, Switzerland. Later this month, there will be the World Economic Forum, which will be hosted in the mountains of Switzerland in the small town outside of Zurich called Davos. And in Davos, there's going to be practically every world leader will be descending among the place, big policy leaders, a lot of business leaders as well. And we'll be there too. Consumer Choice Center, we're actually going to be broadcasting from there, trying to put together an episode to keep you informed as to what is happening with policy and figuring out if we can change some minds. And we've got a great event that will be put on by our good man, Mr. Clement here.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. So we host our it will be our second annual cannabis conclave. Brings together the industry, it brings together policymakers, it brings together investors, all to keep that conversation going in terms of medical and recreational legalization. So it is a very high profile event. It is a whirlwind of a week, very prestigious crowd. So it's nice to have some pro-freedom voices in the room at these various events, because they can often be quite paternalistic, really focused on big government solutions to problems. So we descend on Davos to be the voice of reason, and to help people really understand that there can be better solutions to the problems that the world faces without intruding so heavily into everybody's lives.
Yeah, imagine Michael Bloomberg times about 5,000, and that's basically what you have most of the time.
Yes, exactly.
In this
exactly.
scenario. So, yeah, there'll be plenty to come there. And if you're interested in that, you can go to cannabisconclave.com, see more of the information there. And it's obviously on our website, consumerchoiceradio.com. Definitely awesome things to come out of that. And I think it's going to be a great program. Hopefully, we won't be freezing too much, and we'll be able to put on our warm mittens and continue to do the show. So speaking of that, we mentioned some of the pieces that have been written by some of our colleagues at Consumer Choice Center, including David and myself. I just wanted to highlight a few that might be of interest. For those of you who care about trade, free trade, there's an article that was written in 1828 by our colleague Maria Chaplia. Hers is, "Young People Choose Free Trade and the Government Should Too." She's discussing a lot of what's happening in the United Kingdom with Brexit and how young people actually as a force and by all the polls are totally in favor of free trade, do not want tariffs. They want lower prices, more access to markets around the world. This is kind of the Amazon Prime generation. And this is kind of what we're always aiming for. And we love to have that freedom and choice. So very good article. That'll be in the show notes there. I had a piece of articles in both the Miami Herald and the Los Angeles Daily News about the need for legal reform. First one is on Florida's frivolous lawsuits and costly verdicts. Just a nice little piece right around the holidays to talk about why that's important and why we need to be able to reform the system so we're not really letting lawyers, who are the normal injury attorneys, get away with murder. The hundreds of thousands of dollars in payments and millions of dollars in bogus lawsuits, everything from the Impossible Whopper being too close to the meat on the grill to this product caused my cancer. It's so many things that are out there. That's one. I mentioned David's article in the New Zealand Dominion Post about what New Zealand can learn from Canada's cannabis experiment. And then we have two from our writer extraordinaire, Bill Wietz, who will be making a debut on the program here very soon. He has one in the UK called After Brexit, Let's Embrace Gene Editing. Gene editing, awesome technology, great things to come on that. You can find that in there. And then Bill was actually able to publish in Germany's most established newspaper, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, about the Nutri-Score. Now, for consumer advocates, this Nutri-Score actually comes from France, and it's something that Germany is considering. It's basically so that every time you go to the grocery store and pick a product up off the shelf, it's going to have a ranking of how healthy it is, from whatever number and color, green being the best, to red being bad. So the government will be using all of their advice to tell you what to eat and what not to eat. How about that, David?
Well, what's hilarious about that is I believe it was the New York Times just recently did an expose on government food guides. And the headline, I'm paraphrasing, is something along the lines of, "We were wrong all along."
Oh, I love that.
Highlighting that the government's previous obsession with carb heavy diets and various other things really had some negative public health impacts overall. And I think the important takeaway from stuff like that is obviously we want to know what is in what we're eating. Totally understandable. It's in many instances like better consumer behavior to get that information. But when we get into the government attempting to pick winners and losers per se by having some sort of ranking system, what you do is any mistake you make, you multiply it by an entire society. And that's really what we had with old food guides. And now governments are having to go back to the books and restructure their food guides and figure out what all of the mistakes that they've made. I think it's much better to give consumers information and let them make those decisions for themselves, rather than trying to do this nudging and coercive suggestions of this product is better than this, which really doesn't take into account your own physiology. It doesn't take into account your own preferences, your own diet, things like that. And so, yes, on the information side, but definitely no on this nudging side of things, trying to tell people or push them into certain directions as to what they can eat. And I think the big one here, I mean, for listeners, imagine if the government all of a sudden said that, okay, well, we've determined that veganism is better for you, so we all have to be vegans. Regardless of whether or not that's true, no way. That sounds awful for me personally. I'm sure there's lots of people listening who are going, wait a second, oh, that would suck. So let's not go down that road of having the government have that ability to kind of coerce or push our diet choices.
I love that though, that the headline, I think New York Times should just hit control and C and paste that headline as often as possible, because there are so many things that we learn after years and years that was wrong. The conventional wisdom was wrong. The science was wrong. We've now corrected it, and policy should change. So I think they should definitely do that. And speaking of people who are wrong or the opposite of wrong, definitely we have a lot of that on social media. And one segment I'd like to do here is to give every program a couple of Twitter recommendations for listeners of the program, just to kind of highlight some good work that people are doing amongst the cesspool that is social media. There are often people who do a very good job of informing others, providing very good information. I have two recommendations. I know David has some. I'll start with mine very quickly. One is Market Urbanism. That's just at Market Urbanism on Twitter. A great page for following everything that has to do with Yes in My Backyard, zoning reform, very interesting urbanism. I mean, there's so much change that's happening. There's a lot of great innovation that's happening in terms of our cities, how they're built, how they're designed, and how they're better accommodating people. So that's one great Twitter that I would put out there. And another one is one of my former professors, Mike Munger, very well known in North Carolina, actually ran for governor under the Libertarian Party banner and got their highest vote total ever. He is a professor at Duke University. His Twitter handle is Mungovitz, Mungo W-I-T-Z. You can follow him on Twitter. He's got great, great stuff coming every morning. He's got a blog post that comes out every morning. He's got a couple videos that are kind of funny. Someone who knows all about consumer choice. He's actually an economist and teaches economics, knows all about this from every angle. He's a great, great Twitter follow.
Yeah, and then for me, the people who I would suggest to follow, the first would be Guy Bentley. He's the director of consumer freedom at the Reason Foundation. He is always in the mix on lifestyle politics, what is being overregulated next, why it shouldn't be, really digging into the data and the research on that. He can be followed at GBentley1, so at GBentley1. Great follow there, hilarious guy. Also in that light, for those who are maybe interested in UK politics or European politics, Christopher Snowden, with the IEA in the UK, another guy who is always in the mix on these consumer policies, whether the government wants to ban vape products or energy drinks or add a syntax to your red meat. He is kind of in the front lines of those discussions and those battles. He can be followed at C.J. Snowden with an O, S-N-O-W-D-O-N. Wow. So those are my two suggestions.
David, going with an all-British lineup. Wow.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I think your Kanzuck appreciation is showing a bit too much.
Yes. Good to know. Exactly.
Well, cool. Well, you know, we got some very good indications of great things coming out of the United Kingdom, as we mentioned with Bill Vietz's article and gene editing. Great innovations happening in Canada with cannabis and hopefully some changes. But let's look towards a favorite bastion here in the United States, one of the most sought after places to live in the entire country, the state of California. Now, David, we discussed this a lot. We can probably have a colleague based in California who would be so busy. We'd probably need a team of about 15 people to be in California just to talk about all the different consumer issues and regulations that are coming out every day. I mean, this is a place where your consumer innovations go to die. California is so problematic right now.
Yeah, if it's new and it moves, someone will try and ban it.
And it's not just if it moves and it blows. Yeah, this is also if it blows. This is the new regulation that's going to come out. Apparently, if you are in landscaping, you can't use gas-powered things anymore. Here's a small clip to tell us about that, because that's another thing California needs to regulate.
Mark Bailey knows he'll have to sell more of this battery-powered equipment as he prepares to lose sales of another kind of inventory, blowers and mowers that run on gas. He sells about 500 of them a year.
It's going to be tens of thousands of dollars. Yeah.
Some 60 cities in California already have some form of ban on gas-powered garden tools, including Berkeley, Los Gatos, Mill Valley, and Sonoma. Nevada is set to discuss its own ban this year.
I don't think it's complete ban practical, no. People use their equipment, but, you know, limit it.
When you think gas guzzling culprit, this is probably what comes to mind, but there's a reason why garden equipment is on the radar of those fighting to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions.
A top-selling leaf blower, for example, operating for 1 hour matches the emissions from driving a 2016 Toyota Camry for over 1,100 miles.
Mayor Pat Eklund says she respects longtime business owners like Mark Bailey. So the plan is to first discuss the ban within the first half of 2020, giving plenty of time to consult with locals who could be affected.
The time limits, I would look into that so we can use it in a certain time frame during the day.
All right, everybody, let's we're just going to talk about a ban first.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. It's so There's two parts here. The first is, okay, so if you do this ban, what are the alternatives? Are the electric alternatives practical for a commercial landscaping business that that is, let's say, on the road for 8, 10, 12 hours a day? I don't know. I can only assume, based on my own kind of anecdotal experience with those that type of equipment, that the answer to that is probably no. You're
well,
gonna have
actually,
to have
David,
all sorts of weird
you could
rechargers.
Do it. You could do it if you had a large diesel fuel generator.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah, yeah. I can picture it now. Some guy who's completely gone green with a huge diesel generator in the back of a truck that's being used to charge all the power blocks for this equipment. That's the first issue. And the second issue is California already has fuel taxes. So people are already paying through the nose to fill up this equipment. So there's one very, very intrusive measure to curb behavior apparently isn't working. So what else can we do? And it just creates that kind of left foot, right foot of government intrusion where it's like, okay, well, we're going to hit you with a gas tax. That's going to suck. Then we're going to ban the products that we don't particularly like that really probably in the grand scheme of things are not nearly as impactful on a macro scale as others, but we don't like them. So we're going to go after those. And they continue down the road of, okay, well, what do we set our sights on next? All right, well, drive-thrus. We don't like cars idling. And as crazy as that might sound to some listeners, there are jurisdictions in the U.S. and in Canada where local councillors have said, okay, well, gas taxes aren't enough, car taxes aren't enough, all of these other fees are not enough. We're just going to straight up ban the things that we don't like drive-thrus. And so you see this tide of intrusion coming towards you, and it's pretty frightening when you start to see where things are going.
Not to mention that if a waiter comes up to you in a California restaurant and offers you a plastic straw, that's an automatic $5,000 fine for the restaurant.
Yeah.
I mean, this is there's so much that's coming out of California. One thing I would actually recommend is a great program, National Review Radio, that's hosted by my former colleague Will Swaim, called Radio Free California. If any of you have connections or family in California, it's a great program, great insight into a lot of the regulations and things that are happening there. And Will, who's a president of the California Policy Center, is actually leading the charge against many of them. So great stuff coming out of that. But I tell you, California, what a place. That's the next place for the Consumer Choice Center Bureau to set up. So a lot of great things to come there. This is Consumer Choice Radio on the Big Talker FM 106.7 out of Wilmington, North Carolina. Again, you can check out all the links, things that we've been talking about in videos on consumerchoiceradio.com. Plenty of videos and links and stories and just so much great work that our colleagues have been doing. It's a pleasure to be able to work alongside so many talented people. And, you know, this is something that we do because we believe in it, and we've been fighting for consumer freedom, for consumer choice now for a number of years. And it's not just the great innovations that come from smartphones such as Uber and Airbnb and the sharing economy, but it's also all the products that you consume, trying to make sure that people have more money in their pockets so they can afford better stuff, live better, have better lives. That's sort of very chief to our mission. And speaking of cheap food, this is an article that you had highlighted to me, David, and I actually stole from your Twitter feed. And this is about dollar stores. Dollar stores, people around North Carolina and around the world are very familiar with. This is the kind of cheap store, something like a Dollar Tree, Family Dollar, these kind of establishments, and they offer incredibly low prices. They used to be just $1 for everything. Some of them have evolved and do have things that are a bit more expensive. But it seems that there's a trend now in many, many cities of banning some of these because they add to the phenomenon known as, quote, food deserts. The idea is that a lot of people who don't have much money are going to these stores, not buying the best quality of food, and that's making them much more unhealthy and reducing their life capacity. And I think the answer by a lot of legislators has been to, all right, let's just ban the stores altogether. Let's ban an establishment that offers stuff at cheap prices.
Yeah, it's especially when we talk about people below the poverty line, what a cruel move to those people, basically just telling them to kick rocks and go and beat it and go spend way more money elsewhere. It's just such a kick in the pants for those people. And the crazy thing is that it's almost always from politicians on let's say the left or the progressive side of politics who pride themselves in terms of caring about the poor. And here we have all of these stores, regardless of what you think of them personally, that provide cheap goods and meet consumer demand in a way that's more effective than other stores. And these low-income Americans save a lot of money shopping at these stores. And it certainly isn't always food. It can be dish soap. It can be everything really that you could purchase in house. And so, yeah, I love the idea of discount stores being available and people having the choice to go in and save money buying the items that they need to buy. And so to see these politicians go after these dollar stores is just such a horrendous move for low income Americans. It's problematic because they're still going to have to buy all of these things. Where are they going to buy them? They're going to buy them at stores that are more expensive, and they're just going to have less money in their pockets. And that shouldn't be celebrated by anybody. Yeah.
That's very true. And one thing that I think the Big Talker FM here, this station, prides itself on is really focusing on local impact and local news and where a lot of these things happen. And it's very much true that most of the restrictions on consumer choice, you know, it's not all coming out of Trump or congressional mm-hmm. Democrats. A lot of it is right there at your city council. It's in your county. It's the zoning boards.
Yeah.
It's these areas that are making it harder for people to make a living in many cases of the sharing economy, or even to just to buy ordinary goods that they need in the case of dollar stores. In terms of residential property, I think this is a recurring theme. We'll talk a lot about property, but there's an article here I wanted to point to in the Orange County Register that talks about single family zoning. There mm-hmm. is a proposal in Oregon that I'd like to call the Oregon solution. This was passed a couple of months ago that bans zoning for single family housing. Now, what that means is that in areas that have been designated as this is only where single family houses can be built, these restrictions no longer will apply. So you are free to build a larger duplex. You are free to build a larger apartment building, or you can have your single family housing, but you're not going to be restricted to only that. That's huge out of Oregon, and other jurisdictions are talking about this. But on the other side, the NIMBYs, the not in my backyard, are saying that doing this is actually detrimental. This is actually just going to make rent go up a lot more. There's just going to be luxury apartments. There's so much that's happening. This is upzoning. This is the trend of upzoning. Hashtag, you can look that up. This is very positive out of Oregon. I think this is very good news coming out of the West Coast, which doesn't happen too often.
No, I mean, it's how refreshing is it to see that some legislators understand how supply and demand works.
Yes.
we have a rental crisis. I mean, it's not just North American. This exists all through Europe as well, where there is a lack of affordable housing. There's a lack of what I would call that like middle affordable housing for middle-class Americans. People are being priced out of the market, and almost all of it comes from these ridiculous restrictions that say, oh, you can't build this type of building on that lot because city council says so. I mean, it completely disregards property rights and what owners and builders want to do. And it just stops the market from being able to meet demand. And what happens when they can't meet demand? Well, you have higher prices, and that's in large part feeding this rental crisis that we see, whether it's in big cities, in North America or even in North Carolina, like Charlotte, or elsewhere on the West Coast, Portland, Los Angeles, San Francisco. So to see something like this come through in Oregon is a big forward. Hopefully we can see more local councils and state legislators take action like this, where they chip away at that NIMBY attitude where counselors basically get to tell people what they can and can't do with their property, and then enact measures that really limit development and really limit the building process.
Yeah. And where you live is one of the most important parts of your life. And wouldn't you want the ability to have more choice instead of less? I think it's a super important principle. You're listening to Consumer Choice Radio, consumerchoiceradio.com. We've gone through a lot of topics here for our premiere episode. We've gone the ups and downs and all betweens, covered some stuff on the political front, some things on the cultural front, and things are always changing and evolving and getting better. But, you know, I can't allow us to go out, David, on our premiere broadcast without a little bit of comedy, a little bit of consumer choice comedy. How does that sound for you?
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, there's a very good Netflix clip that I was able to get here. This is from Ronnie Chiang, and he's talking about the Amazon culture that exists in the U.S. and how we don't need to just have better and faster shipping. We need to have instantaneous delivery of everything. This is Prime Now from Netflix.
More Prime. Can't get enough Prime here. We need it Prime. We need Prime harder, faster, stronger. Faster Prime. Prime Now. Prime Now. 2-hour delivery. Prime Now. Give it to me now. When I press buy, put the item in my hand. Now. In America, there should be no lag. Zero lag. Between when I press the button and when the item is gently placed into my hand, so I can use it now. Oh, same day delivery. Oh, un-American. Same day. Now. Prime now. Break into my house. And put the food I ordered in my mouth. And help me chew it. And then push it down my esophagus with a stick. And then pour the feces out of my anus for me. Now. It's like, where do we go from here? As a civilization, like, how much more convenience can we get? How much less energy can we use to get what we want? Let's get Prime before. Send it to me before I want it. It's 2019, I have to make a decision before you mail me what I buy. Use artificial intelligence to substitute my own intelligence so I can live my life. Send me everything I want before I want it, in as many boxes as possible.
Prime now.
I love it. Oh, I love it. That's great.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, we had to put out a little bit of a comedic piece here on Consumer Choice Radio. Been our broadcast here, our premiere broadcast, just to remind a lot of you listening for the first time, and we hope to count you on as listeners. David, it's been a pleasure to talk to you here for throughout the hour. I think it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, until next week.
Yeah, we've got many more things cooking on consumerchoiceradio.com. We're broadcasting out of Wilmington, North Carolina on the Big Talker FM 106.7. You can find out so much more about our broadcast, the Consumer Choice Center, both David and myself. You'll find us on the net and all around. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. So until next time, we wish you all the best, and may your consumer choice ever evolve.